KQED.
Welcome back to Forum. I'm Dave Iverson in today for Michael Krasny. Last night at 6:30, a series of explosions ignited a large fire at Chevron's Richmond refinery. Fire prompted local health officials to order residents of Richmond, North Richmond, and San Pablo to stay inside for the rest of the evening. The fire was contained within a few hours, though a controlled burn continued as of early this morning. In this half-hour forum, we get the latest of what's known about the fire and the environmental and health concerns it raises. Joining us to do that first, Heather Culp, Public Relations Manager for Chevron in Richmond. Heather, thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much for letting me be on.
And Greg Karras joins us as well, Senior Scientist for Communities for a Better Environment. Greg, good morning.
Good morning.
Heather Culp, what's the latest? What have you found about the cause of the fire?
Well, first of all, I want to start by sincerely apologizing to the community for this incident. I myself am a Richmond resident, and this impacts all of us, and we really want to thank the community for sheltering in place last night, and we're working very hard right now with our own team as well with additional investigators to identify the cause. I can share a couple of things with you, some new information that may provide some clues to understanding the potential reason for this fire. We had a vapor leak of hydrocarbon, which is similar to diesel fuel, that happened at about 4:15 p.m., and this occurred in our number 4 crude unit. We immediately responded to assess the leak, evaluate the risk, and develop a safe and appropriate repair plan. At approximately 6:30 p.m. last night, the volume of the leak increased, and the personnel evacuated the area and initiated emergency response procedures. The hydrocarbon vapor then ignited, resulting in a fire that occurred today. I do want to correct one thing. You had mentioned explosions. There were not explosions yesterday. We did have an ignition and a fire, but no explosions.
Okay, so when people heard the large, what is that then? When you hear the large booms and explosions that people, if not explosions, what is that that people said they heard yesterday?
I'm not entirely sure exactly what people heard. Obviously, we're investigating all that, but I just, our refinery general manager was on site yesterday, and as he said in his press conference last night, he was there. There were not explosions.
Okay. And where are you at as of this morning? The controlled burn, I know, was continuing as of earlier this morning. Is that still going on? Everything contained?
Yes. The main fire has been safely extinguished. Safety officials are allowing a small controlled burn as a safety measure to reduce pressure. This is helping to ensure that more hydrocarbons don't escape. And this is similar in concept to how refineries utilize flares as a safety measure.
So what can you tell us about what was let out into the atmosphere yesterday in terms of the nature of the chemicals? What do we know?
Right now, Contra Costa County Health Services is doing an investigation, and they're really the best people to ask to understand that question.
And what can you tell us about how long this part of the refinery will be closed?
We can't speculate. Our number one concern right now is making sure that everything is contained, and we've done that. And now our next step is going to be to make sure that the controlled burn is done in a proper manner, which it is. And then lastly, what we'll do is understand the root cause. And once we know we can safely bring the refinery back online, we will do that. But I can't speculate on timing at this point.
Okay. Heather Culp, Public Relations Manager for Chevron in Richmond. Let me bring Greg Karras, Senior Scientist for Communities for a Better Environment, into our conversation. Greg, your reaction to what happened yesterday at Chevron and what concerns it prompts for you?
CBE is still checking with our members in the community to make sure people are as safe as possible under the circumstances. We're also checking back with the workers, the refinery, the United Steelworkers Union. Happy to report that so far we have no confirmed serious injuries.
About 150 people sought care locally for respiratory concerns. No one admitted. Is that what you're hearing?
No, that's not what I said. We're hearing larger numbers in terms of hospital visits, and it's early that those numbers could go up. In terms of what we've heard, lots and lots of symptoms of acute exposure, particularly in the North Richmond area and beyond. burning eyes, nose, throat, coughing.
Right. I'm
headaches.
Not minimizing the symptoms. But, I'm just saying Kaiser has said that no one was admitted. Is that – are you hearing anything different than that? Okay.
I've heard that there's more than one hospital where people are going to, but I don't have statistics on – and like I say, it's early. So that was the first thing we did, and we're still doing that because the community warning systems that were supposed to be put in place were not perfect. And that is the first step. Do what we can for as much safety as we can have at the time. In terms of what was emitted, Chevron actually reported, according to the state hazardous materials spill report, sulfur dioxide, nitrogen oxide, hydrogen oxide, sulfuric acid, and nitrogen dioxide emitted. That would be consistent with a fire in a crude oil unit. And I would just say that while we believe Chevron's workers are doing the best job they can under the circumstances to keep the place safe, they are on the front lines. The fact is that this is the second major crude unit fire at this refinery, the crude unit being the primary initial unit where all the crude oil goes in 5 years. Second in 5 years, and it is not normal for a refinery to burn down its crude unit every 5 years.
I want to get to that, but first I just want clarity on this question of what was emitted. What were those, the chemicals you just mentioned again, Greg, please? You're saying this is from the Chevron website?
No, this is Chevron's report recorded by the California Emergency Management Agency.
Last night?
It's dated at 1856 hours. On the 6th of August yesterday, yes.
And Heather Culp, can you confirm that? You just said a moment ago that you couldn't say what was emitted.
I know that we did make a report, and obviously that would be the best information that we had at the time.
And what can either of you tell us about what that means? I'm not familiar with what those particular chemicals are. What do they represent? Mm-hmm. Heather, do you want to comment on whether those chemicals represent any danger to the community or to your workers?
I know that there's a lot of community concern and questions, and we understand that. And so what we have said is that we would like the community to call our hotline for more information and questions regarding these very things. They can call our hotline at 510-242-2000. Also, they can contact the Contra Costa County Health Services. And in addition, we will be holding a community town hall this evening at 6 p.m. with Richmond Key Refinery Management and to help answer questions. We really want to reassure the community that the safety of our neighbors and employees is our number one concern, and we will be happy to talk with them this evening.
All right. Heather, thanks for adding that information in about the community meeting, 6 o'clock this evening. Greg Carasso, back to you in terms of what all of those chemicals you read, given that those were emitted last night, can you tell us anything about the quantities of those and what danger that might represent?
So these are a few chemicals that Chevron reported. They are consistent with what one would expect from a fire of this type in a crude unit burning crude oil and distillate oil, diesel-like substances. As Chevron has said, they are only indicators of the full toxic soup of hundreds, probably thousands, of combustion products and byproducts that come out. These chemicals alone are known to be particulate matter precursors. Particulate matter, toxic soot, is strongly associated with morbidity, mortality, premature death, lung cancer in some studies, and triggers asthma and things like that. The sulfur compounds are also consistent with the headaches and the nitrogen and sulfur compounds are consistent with the burning eyes, throat, and nose that community members are reporting from some parts of Richmond.
And
I would just add that right now, while we have literally no information on the measurement results coming back yet from the laboratories, and those will be few in number compared to the thousands of noses, eyes, and lungs around this refinery, that the community members who live there, who were exposed, are really the experts on what the impacts have been so far. That's the best information we have today, and I hope people will call in and talk about this.
And Heather Culp, I know you have to leave us, but before you do, what can you tell us about the connection, if there is any, between this and the other fire that Greg Karas mentioned, which was in 2007? I know it was in a different unit within the refinery, but that would be cause for concern, is it not, that those two fires have taken place in that general area and they have happened within that five-year time span?
Our primary concern always at the refinery is the safety of our employees and the surrounding community. We will work with regulatory agencies to properly understand what the causes of this incident were, and we'll put that understanding into practice. You know, we are a learning organization. Every incident that happens, we learn, we put better processes into place, and I can tell you right now that our employees are fully engaged on that effort right now.
I understand, but I guess my question again is, isn't that cause for concern? If you live in that neighborhood, as you said yourself do, if there have been two fires like this that have happened within a five-year period, is that not cause for concern if you live in that neighborhood?
We're continually striving to improve our operational processes to minimize these incidences, and we will effectively work with our regulatory agencies to make sure that we put into process and into place all those procedures that we need to make sure that these types of things don't happen in the future.
All right, Heather Culp, I know you have to leave us. Thanks for
adding
your perspective this morning. Heather Culp, the public relations manager from the Chevron facility in Richmond. Greg Karas stays with us. We're also joined now by Sandy Settern. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. She's a community organizer living in the Richmond area, was raised in Richmond, though she now lives in San Leandro. We're also joined by David Baker, who's been covering this story as an energy reporter for the San Francisco Chronicle. Thanks both very much for joining us. We're going to open up our phone lines as well, 866-733-6786. If you live in the Richmond area, if you work at the Chevron facility, if you have concerns about what happened last night, we'd like to hear from you, 866-733-6786. Email us at forum@kqed.org. Sandy Settern, as someone who lived in the Richmond area for many years, give me your reaction to what happened last night and the cause of and the kind of concerns that you're feeling this morning.
It's horrible. I am outraged by, you know, what has happened. Just like you mentioned earlier to the Chevron representative, this has happened, you know, twice now in the last couple years, and why are they not fixing this problem? I, you know, grew up in Richmond, grew up in North Richmond, lived right across the street, you know, went to Perry's Elementary School, which is right across the street from Chevron, and we deal with this all the time. And, you know, in the first two quarters of this year, 2012, they made $13.7 billion in profits, and they still can't fix problems like this, and they still can't assure the safety of the at the refinery and of the community. This is not right. And, another thing that I found out last night as an organizer here in Richmond is I was calling my leaders, my family, to warn them because, you know, we work here in Richmond. My whole family still lives here, and they were calling me saying, what's happening? You know, we see black smoke. We see huge fires. What's going on? And I was telling them it's happening at the Chevron refinery to shelter in place. And as I was talking to my leaders, they were saying, you know, they didn't know what was going on. So they hear the sirens and the first, you know, reaction instinct of their is to go outside and see what's going on. So they were actually outside smelling the fumes, you know, the smoke, and some of them actually are feeling symptoms of, you know, weakness, hard time breathing. And what ended up happening is, you know, years ago we fought for a warning system, a countywide multilingual warning system that actually did not work last night. So I've confirmed with multiple, you know, community members that have these systems in their home to see if they were warned, and the actual boxes did not work. So that's a big issue.
Sandy Settern, a community organizer, lived in the Richmond area for many years, though now lives in San Leandro. David Baker, can you confirm that from your reporting or any of your colleagues reporting at the Chronicle, that there were aspects of the warning system that did not work last night?
Actually, that's one of the things that we're trying to nail down this morning. We'd heard that from a number of Richmond residents. At the same time, the reporters that we had out there were hearing sirens and that kind of warning system going on. So we're still trying to figure out exactly what worked and what didn't.
And give us some context if you would, David, from your perspective as someone who's covered this story for a while, about this sort of the ongoing tensions between people in the Richmond community and Chevron, and this question of whether or not Chevron's desire to upgrade the plant, but concerns about the environmental impact of that from the community. Give us, if you would, a quick one-minute sort of overview that puts the events of last night in a broader context.
Well, the events of last night could end up basically sort of solidifying the two different sides of it. You know, you've got Chevron, which has been wanting to upgrade this facility for several years and expand sort of change the palette of crude oils that they can use there. And they're going to be saying, well, you know, look, this thing's over 100 years old. Yes, we keep replacing the equipment as it goes, so it's not century-old equipment, but we need to renovate this thing. Their supporters are probably going to see this as proof that, yes, they do need to renovate the place. On the other hand, if you're a Richmond resident who has already had to live through a whole bunch of shelter-in-place experiences, you're probably not going to be feeling terribly charitable towards that argument. You're going to say, well, you know, this thing is a constant source of pollution, and it scares me, frankly. So why should we have this thing still on the border of our community? In a way, I don't see this helping that situation. I see it actually increasing the stalemate, as it were.
Greg Karas, give us your perspective on this from Communities for a Better Environment. On the one hand, it would seem like that you'd want to upgrade this plant and make sure that these sorts of fires and accidents don't happen in the future and that more would be done to make this environmentally sounder. And yet, of course, there's been a strong pushback about this from the community for many years.
We do want to see the plant upgraded and state-of-the-art as clean as it could be while Chevron's still refining oil there. I have tremendous respect for David Baker. Hi, David.
How are you doing?
I don't agree at all with the way he frames the question. The fact is that Chevron's project, although what was legally inadequate, what was illegal about the way that project was approved, was that Chevron did not disclose the environmental details, including not disclosing just how heavy the oil could get, which is the major driver of greenhouse gas emissions and combustion emissions day in, day out at refineries nationwide. The major problem was that they did not disclose, but they did disclose more than enough information to know for absolute certain that this crude unit was not part of what they were going to replace. Chevron did not propose and is not proposing to replace this crude unit in its project. And so any suggestion by Chevron or anyone else that this is the community being scared and stopping Chevron from replacing old equipment like this is just false.
But
and what is true is what is clearly similar about the Chevron project problem and the problem we have right now is that every question you have, that the community has, about what really are the health effects, what caused this, and what can we do to fix it so it won't recur, that information still today is secret from the public. There are some good reasons for it in the case of an accident that just happened yesterday. But in terms of Chevron's project, we're still waiting after the court ordered it in 2010. To get the full environmental review.
And David, jump back in if you would, please. But what I understood you to say was that Chevron is likely to use this as ammunition for their desire to get an upgrade.
I think it's entirely possible. You know, obviously they're going to try to find some way to play this incident to their best advantage, whatever way they can. And yeah, I see that as a pretty logical path for them to take, even if this isn't the particular unit that was one of the particular units that was going to be impacted by that project, the renovation project. I want to jump in with what Greg was saying, though. That's absolutely true in terms of the environmental impact report. The sort of the amazing thing in all of that was you have this huge renovation project that the company has been working on for a while, and when the judge took a look at it, he said, well, wait, actually, this key question about the types of crude there and the types of air quality emissions that you're going to get wasn't really answered, and that was a pretty major stumbling block. It has not been removed. The company has not, to my knowledge, supplied that information yet.
And Sandy Saturn, is that your general sense and the sense in the community that nothing comes easy when it comes to getting information from Chevron?
Yes, especially, you know, for our bilingual community here. they can't get the information. Us as organizers, we even have a hard time getting information from Chevron. And so for our community, anything that relates to, you know, knowing of what's going on with the refinery, whether it's an incident or just what they're trying to do with their expansion that they're calling an upgrade, our community is not aware of what's going on, and they haven't been transparent with their information.
Let's hear what some of our listeners are concerned about who live in that area. Tara gets us started first in El Cerrito nearby. Tara, go ahead.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. You had Heather Culp on, who's the Chevron representative, and I was very surprised that you or someone else didn't ask her specifically and in detail what measures were taken between 4 and 6 p.m. when the vapor leak was first detected and the fire ignited. Given the history and the context, I would have thought that would be an extremely important question to press, and they should have their feet to the fire until they answer specific questions like that and like those as the one that David Baker was just talking about.
Fair enough, Tara. She did indicate that they had taken all appropriate steps between 4 and 6. Fair enough. I'm not sure what other detailed information we would have received, but fair enough. I take your point that it would have been useful to get even more detail. But this is David Baker, why don't you jump back in on this? I mean, we're hearing concern, and I think it's fair to say that we didn't get lots of detail from Ms. Culp. Has that been your experience as a reporter as well?
I actually haven't worked with her all that much. I've been dealing with other people over at Chevron. But no, we still do not have very much detail as to what happened, when it happened, and the sequence of events that unfolded between that initial discovery and the start of the fire. That's one of the main things that we're trying to get today, but we still don't have it.
And Greg Harris, are you hearing any more about that, about what might have happened or what should have happened between 4 and 6?
Well, I think Tara's question's excellent. This is exactly how practical community members who are actually exposed or in the line of fire are. And in fact, we will know more. And it is important for all of us, KQED also, to ask these questions come Thursday night, Friday morning, when the 72-hour report under the ordinance that the communities of Richmond and Contra Costa County and CBE got adopted, they're required to actually report their first report. At that point, Chevron will be taking, basically signing under oath, the initial report of what happened. Then we have a basis for asking very specific questions and moving on to the next, to really get to the bottom of it, and to then have a community voice in solving the problem. You know, when Chevron keeps saying that their primary concern is the safety of their workers in the community, I'll just say this once, that stretches credibility. And if it's true, they'll probably get sued for breaching their fiduciary responsibility to their shareholders. So really what we need here is the kind of disclosure, and we need to keep looking for that. On the other hand, and here's where it's hopeful as well as complicated, Chevron does have new management at this refinery. We could turn over a new leaf. And as a specific example of that, while people argue about when are we ever going to get the full project done. In fact, after the court decision, Chevron took a piece of that project, the tank replacements, disclosed the information about it. It went through the whole environmental review process under state law, CEQA, and the city's process in 59 days. And with a minor modification that was technically feasible that Chevron didn't appeal, which reduced pollution from that part of the project, it's now being built. So this is what Chevron could do. We hope they will. We hope to hear that at 6 p.m. tonight.
Greg Karras, the senior scientist with Communities for a Better Education. Tara, thanks for the call. Fair point. And it's one I'm sure our reporters here at KQED News will try to pursue over the course of the day as well. And I imagine David Baker and his colleagues at the Chronicle, too. John in Alameda joins us next. John, go ahead.
Yeah, I've been a Chevron cardholder since I was in college, before I even got my driver's license, because I was a hitchhiker. And I'm reminded of the old Chicago saying, you know, about the crooked alderman. He may be a crook, but he's our crook. And that's been my local loyalty to Chevron all these years as a Californian. But I rode my bike home from a meeting where we didn't hear about this after 8 o'clock last night from Oakland to Alameda, and I was out for 25 minutes. And I'm wondering how much the fire last night would have affected people like me this far from the fire and how much we should be worried about it. I had a headache when I got home. I didn't know what it was from. So how does that work? I want to see Chevron be a lot more transparent. I was very disappointed in their PR rep who stayed with her script and did nothing to relate to the community the way I would think a professional PR person should do. I really want to see Chevron be more transparent and behave better in Latin America, too.
John, I'm going to hold you there because we're short on time, but thanks for the call and the question. Presumably, Greg Kerr said at the community meeting this evening, there will be health officials from Contra Costa County who can respond to those sorts of specific questions that John has.
I don't know. I hope so. My understanding is that this is Chevron's meeting. I'm glad they're calling it. I encourage people to go. I think that, and as I just said, I hope that Chevron will begin the process of being truly transparent and really working with the community. They can make plenty enough profit running the best, cleanest refinery, state of the art. They don't have to go to cheaper, dirtier crude for a few pennies a gallon. And I'd add, they don't need to boost gas prices. U.S. refineries are exporting more gasoline than Chevron's total production right
now. Let's end, because we're out of time, with just a couple of questions that really need to be asked and need to be answered. Sandy Saderin, what's the question you're bringing tonight?
So earlier you had a Chevron representative on the phone, and she said, you know, they are striving to protect the health of their refinery and the health of the community. What does that mean to me? Please dumb that down for me. Put it in on paper. Put it in bullet points of what that means for the community and what kind of protection and health we are going to see.
And David Baker, from your standpoint covering this story, what do you want to ask and have answered that hasn't been yet?
I think the most important thing that I'm interested in is just sort of the steps that they say that they took yesterday when they discovered there might be a problem, steps to protect their own people, steps to protect the community, and then see what they're going to do going forward to make sure that there isn't something like this again.
All right. Thanks all very much. All important questions and questions that we will try to get answers to as we continue to cover this story. Sorry, Greg Karras, we're out of time. But thanks very much for joining us. Greg Karras, senior scientist with Citizens Communities Rather for a Better Environment. Sandy Saturn joined us as well. Heather Culp earlier from Chevron in Richmond. And David Baker, energy reporter for the San Francisco Chronicle. Forum is produced by Judy Campbell and Tina Lorberg. Dan Zoll is our senior editor. Howard Gelman, our engineer. Raul Ramirez, our executive producer. I'm Dave Iverson. This is Forum on KQED.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation, in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg, and by a generous gift from Jan Schrem and Maria Minetti Schrem, owners of Clos Pegase Winery, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.